having resources or how you get to the product to then get to your first 100 or so customers is not always the most important thing. Like, you have to be resourceful.
Welcome to Social Entrepreneur. My name is Tony Lloyd. I'm a former Fortune 500 executive, but today I spend my time with changemakers who are making an impact in the world. We hear exciting stories of ordinary people just like you who are making a difference. They share their successes, their failures, and what they're learning along the way. Thanks for being with me today. Let's get started. Hi, and welcome back to Social Entrepreneur and today's guest, Ruth Biza of This Is My Era. This Is My Era provides planners to help you to set goals based on your values. And for those who want to go even deeper, they also sell courses. What makes this an impact company is they make an impact by what they share. For every planner that is sold, they provide school supplies to a child in Africa who cannot afford them. And for every course, they provide a school scholarship. Now, Ruth talks about meeting your own needs and then taking that thing that meets your needs and selling it in the marketplace. She talks about prototyping. She talks about the importance of design. And she talks about the importance of not just having resources, but of being resourceful. So here she is to tell her story, Ruth Biza of This Is My Era.
My name is Ruth Biza, and I am the co-founder of This Is My Era.
And what is This Is My Era?
Well, This Is My Era is a personal development brand that is really passionate about helping others achieve their goals and live their life with intention. And we do this by providing a 90-day planner to help you set goals that truly align with your values. And we also provide online courses to help our planner takers understand or go a little bit deeper on their clarity and purpose for their life so they can start living that out.
And Ruth, you have not just the planner that serves the people that connect with you and they purchase your planner and they purchase your course and they take the course and all that. So you have that side of your business, but This program is called Social Entrepreneur. And the reason we do that is because it's for people who make a dollar and a difference. Mm-hmm. And so not only are you making a difference in the life of the people who purchase your planner and who take your courses, but you're taking some of your profit and you're doing something else with that. So can you talk about that?
Absolutely. So with our planners, for every planner that is purchased, we actually donate school supplies to kids in need in Africa so we can enhance their educational experience. And so far, we've provided about 10,000 and counting school supplies. And then with the online course, for every course that is purchased, we provide a scholarship to children in need to go to school.
So there's a lot of ways to make an impact with your business by what you sell and how you sell it, or by how you source it, or all these different ways. And you're making an impact by what you share. So let's talk about that a little bit. Tell me your background. Why do you think school children in Africa, why is that important to you?
Oh, absolutely. I would be happy to share on that. And this is always the happiest part for me when I'm talking about this. It really all goes back to my upbringing. So I'm originally from Ghana, which is in West Africa. And I was just blessed with the privilege to travel and visit other countries and get an education in different countries. But before I went to Ghana, there were just two profound moments really that transformed my mindset and wanting to make education personal to me. The first experience was a personal one. In Ghana and most of a lot of African countries, public education is not free. So if your family cannot afford to pay for your tuition, you basically stayed at home. Now, if they could partially afford your tuition, you still went to school, but didn't get that full experience. So for instance, in my case, I had one moment in class where it was in the middle of a session and the financial aid lady comes in class and they call out every single person that owes the school money. and they call you out and you stand in front of the class. So this is just basically an embarrassing moment because every single person on that list, it means you can't afford it. You owe money. They're parading you in front of the class. So other students are seeing that, oh, they can't afford it. They're not going, you know, to experience what we experience. Now, in my head, I thought we were a middle class family and we could afford tuition. So I didn't think that was something that my family could not afford to take me to school. So I got sent home that day, spoke with my parents, and turns out I learned that we actually could, in fact, afford my tuition. My mom, just being the selfless person that she is, was basically using my half of my tuition to pay for the tuition of other kids that were not so fortunate, kids that had lost parents or kids that lived with grandparents that just could not afford it. So she basically figured our family can afford it. They'll take care of me later. She's going to take care of other kids right now who cannot otherwise afford. So that was the first experience for me where I noticed how people view you and how education can just, you know, affect a student or also affect just the minds, the conversation that people have. I would say the second experience for me was more heartbreaking in the sense that it was probably I was around 9 or 10 and my mom and I were returning home from going to the market. And this is still in Ghana. We had stopped at a red light, and usually at a red light, people approach the cars selling anything, just anything they can find to make money and make ends meet. And we were approached by this girl that looked so out of place to me. And at that age, I realized she's probably the same age as me. So why is she here approaching the car, asking for money, begging for these resources when she should, you know, be at home playing or being in school? She just seemed so out of place and it did not sit well with me. So my mom, being the chatty lady that she is, decided to strike up a conversation, and we later learned that across the street, her mom was actually sitting across the street cradling a baby, and her mom was blind and she was just taking care of a newborn baby. So it was up to this 9-year-old girl to find that resource to be able to feed her family. Now in Ghana, and you know, we don't have the soup kitchens or food banks that we do here in the U.S. where students, if you're struggling, you can go in there and get some kind of resource. They didn't have that. And I was so heartbroken by that for such a child that I continued the conversation with my mom and learning from her and what she grew up with, because my mom never had an education, but she managed to build a business and then use that to help support other people. But to her, education was very important. So she always drilled it in me that, hey, if you can help educate somebody, just one person, to transform their life, then do it. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, I was like, okay, I'm going to do something. I don't know what, but I'm going to do something. And I was probably around 9. So that was really where that passion for education came from, because I believed that it was the only solution for people to come out of poverty and these uncertain circumstances that they were born into.
Yeah. Wow. What a story. 9-year-old Ruth sitting in the car making this decision. I'm going to make a difference. And here you are today, 10,000 school supplies plus scholarships. So this is a great story. Now, before the podcast, you were talking about the fact that you used to make a difference. What you tried to do was just to give money. Yeah. And eventually you change that. So talk to me about what happened here. Why do you think it's not a great idea to just simply give money? And what are you doing instead?
So initially, yeah, all I did was give money. I thought that was the way to help. And it was also what I had been exposed to on TV and talking to other people outside of my family. It was always, yeah, just donate the money and so organization will take care of it. They'll handle it. So I thought, oh, that's the way to go. I made that promise that I was going to help. And if this organization is helping, I'll just give them the money. The thing is, I was not doing my due diligence of researching what they were focusing on. Was it education? Was it hygiene? Was it gender equality? I was just given the money because I wasn't really sticking to that personal value or what meant something to me. In my head, if I give money, somebody else does the work. I've done my part and I move on. My conscience is clear and it's a great day. But after a couple of times of doing that, I just felt so convicted in the sense that, was I really doing it to help people or I was doing it to make myself feel better because I had said I would do something? And that really led me to start investigating all the different places that I was donating to. Some I did learn were actually not, in fact, given the donations to the causes that they said they were going to be giving them to. So that was one of the moments where I knew, okay, I have to do something now. I need to take it upon myself to figure out what the plan will be. So to take that a little bit further, my husband and I, together, we actually founded a nonprofit that we call Amani Hope Foundation. And Amani is a Swahili word that means peace. And we wanted to use that as our way to get started. So we are picking education because as me personally, as I spoke about, education was very dear to my heart. And my husband, who's also from Zimbabwe, which is on the south of Africa, he also had a similar experience when we were having a conversation and he also had made a promise to educate people. So I realized, oh, wow, this is incredible. So that's going to be our thing. It's going to be quality education or enhancing the educational experience for the forgotten kids. So we try to go into the spaces that a lot of these organizations were not coming into, the rural areas. And when we launched our foundation, I discovered something that I did not like doing, which was asking people for money. Because when you have a nonprofit, really, it's you're fundraising. And I'm not into that. So we knew we had to come up with a plan, something that is going to fund the nonprofit. And that's why we started, one of the reasons why we started This Is My Era. And then that's the reason why I came in and I was like, all right, we're going to create this planner. But the goal for the planner, it's just going to be a tool, but really the driving force for that planner is so it can provide us the resources that we need to fund our nonprofit. So that way there is a stream, a constant stream of income coming in for us to be able to continue to expand our impact.
You had seen this model somewhere else, though, to sell goods and to give the profits to a cause. So where did that come from?
So this model I learned from my husband. When he was a junior in college, he started a clothing company called AFR Clothing with only $140. So that's all he had. And because he had made that promise when he was back in Zimbabwe to help educate other kids that didn't have the access or, you know, privilege to come to America for education, he figured, all right, what can I do right now as a junior in college with no resources, broke, I only have $140. What can I do with this to make an impact? So he started researching, and this was when we were in Florida, and he learned a lot of people in Florida wear t-shirts and flip-flops and tank tops, and you have that everywhere. So he started off with, all right, we're going to create t-shirts, and we're going to sell those. And then we're going to use proceeds from that to then educate these kids that he had made the promise to. And that is really where I had learned it from. So he built it from college. He was selling it to college students. He was selling it to us, his friends. He would make his first round of purchase. I think his first round, he realized we sold out within days. He went back, designed more, came back again, sold it to the same college students, and sold out again. And that's where he realized, oh, wow, I think I have a business here. Because initially, it wasn't going to be a business. It was going to be a way to get money to send it back to Zimbabwe to educate these kids.
So you and Kuda, he was doing that business before you two became a couple?
Yes. So he was doing this freshman, he was a junior in college and I was a freshman.
you two eventually came together, right? So you form a couple, and you're both passionate about education. So you've been trying to donate money, but then you're like, well, there's this model. So how did you land on a planner? Why was a planner the thing to do?
The reason why we chose a planner is because this is my era. The name itself, it started as a speech or motivational speech that we had given at a college, at an event called Millennium Campus Conference, which is a yearly event where college students, the college leaders come together and we talk about all these social impact issues and ways that college students can provide solutions. So at one of those speeches, my husband Kuda at the time also gave a speech and he named it, This Is My Era. And the goal behind This Is My Era was you don't have to wait until you make it in life, right? Because a lot of us are like, yeah, I'm going to wait till I make it until I start doing something to help people. He was saying, no, this is your era. This is your time right now. Use the resources that you have available to you and start making a difference, even if it's in your community, if it's picking up trash in your neighborhood, whatever it is, this is your time to make a difference and leave a lasting impact. Now, the beauty about those conferences is we ended up taking that same speech. He ended up touring the country. We spoke at about 30 high schools. They spoke in the UK. They went to Morocco, just encouraging different students to, you know, be that impact, right? Be that change. So at the end of every conference or at the end of every speech, a lot of students would come up to us and they'll say, hey, I have this idea where I want to start this business for this, to have this kind of impact on the world, to address this issue, but I have no idea where to begin. And our first questions, every single one of them was always, okay, what are your goals? And it was always kind of like, what do you mean? And as simple as that question is, we were like, well, yeah, you want to start all of these. It's great, but what are your goals? And most people were not able to really narrow it down. And as part of This Is My Era, we had our own version of 90-day planners that we had created that we were using internally to help us kind of delegate work and make sure we were meeting our timelines and everything together. So I was like, you know what? So many of these entrepreneurs and students, we've spoken with hundreds and they all seem to have the same issue. Why don't we use what we're using internally for our team? Why don't we create a version of it and make it available to everybody else to help them set their goals, but make sure that their goals really align with their values and what they're trying to achieve in life ultimately, and then help them create tiny little action steps that they can take every single day that is going to lead to that ultimate end of that goal achievement and goal fulfillment. So that's how I came about and I created the 90-day planner.
You have this tool that you're using internally. Was that something that you had like cobbled together from other planners, or was it, you know, just like a notebook that you had drawn things in, or what did that first planner look like inside your company?
So it was more, it looked like an Excel sheet, but it was ideas from different, because I've always been into goal setting and goal tracking, and I tried so many planners in the marketplace. So I would see one and I'd pick something from here and I'm like, oh, that's great, but it'll look better if it was like this. And then we would draw it on paper or put it on an Excel sheet. And we're like, find another one. We're like, oh, this is a great concept, but it'll look better. So he's just tweaking and trying to make sure it fit our, you know, internal team. So just taking what was already on the market and what was working for others, but it wasn't really working for us. But I used that idea to create and innovate from that. And so we actually drew it, used it as an Excel. And that's really what we were using before we decided, okay, let's make it available to everyone. Then we changed the design and look of it to make it print ready.
So two things I love about that. One is that some of the greatest business ideas, they come from trying to meet your own needs, right? So yes. I have a need. There's nothing in the marketplace that's meeting my needs. I have a gap here. Let me create something that meets my own needs. And then other people go, oh, that would be helpful to me. The other thing that I love about what you said is that it's about prototyping. You didn't have the perfect solution. You created something, you played around with it, you tweaked it, you played around with it some more, you tweaked it, and then eventually you got it so that it was something you liked, it was useful. But then the third thing, I just want to mention this, and maybe I said there's only two, but it's three things here. So the third thing that I noticed in this story is before it was ready to go to the marketplace, you thought design is very important, that aesthetic is very important. So I love that about your story. Those three things about it, that you're meeting your own need first, that you're prototyping before you go forward, and that design is very important. So you probably found a printer or some kind of print on demand and you got started. And so how did you sell your first, let's say, 100 units?
Yeah, so it's actually an interesting story of even how we even funded this business to start with. It was really at a tough time. It was like at a really crazy, crazy season for us. So my now husband then, before, we had just moved to an apartment in New Jersey, and we had probably been living there for about 4 months. And we were getting ready for our wedding, which is upcoming within that same month. Both our parents also lived in Africa, as I mentioned, mine on the west and his on the south. So we were planning to get them all here in time for the wedding. And we had just closed on a house. All of this happening at the same time. So we were moving again. And here we were thinking, let's launch a business on top of everything else that we're doing. So think about it this way. Wedding, buying a house, family in town, launching a business. Like, who does all of these things within that short amount of time, right? Because just one in itself is crazy, but all of this is crazy. But what we found was our supplier. We found a supplier and we really shared our vision and the goal that we had for the business. And we don't know if we delivered it well or if they just felt terrible for us or they believed in our mission, but whatever it was, they gave us these flexible payment terms. And that to us really got it started. And for me, the key really in that story or that lesson that I would love for people to really take away from that aspect is having resources or how you get to the product to then get to your first 100 or so customers. It's not always the most important thing. Like, you have to be resourceful, right? It's about being resourceful as opposed to having all of the resources ready to go. And for us, that is exactly what we did. We didn't really have the plan. We didn't have the money. We didn't have the design experience, supplier, all of that information. But what we knew we had was that we had to be resourceful and get all of these done and provide us with favorable terms that will eventually see this business come to life. And that's what we did.
One of the things that you shared with me was kind of something you didn't get right at first. And so do you want to talk a little bit about, you know, I mean, we love these stories about, and then this happened, and then wonderful things happened, and this happened, then wonderful things happened. But sometimes we just don't get things quite right. So do you want to talk about that a little bit?
One thing we definitely did not get right was not having a team with us. I think as an entrepreneur, in our minds, we think we have to go at it on our own, that it's a solo venture and nobody's going to do it as wonderful as we are. And nobody really understands the product or the service as well as we do because it's our idea, it's our baby. But that was our biggest mistake because it really set us back months. Things that could have been done within weeks took us months. There are even situations that took me a couple of years to get done because I was doing it on my own. And that was my biggest setback where I was like, I have to build a team, but then make sure the team members have the strengths that you lack. And then empowering them to be able to take initiative and own the brand and own the business just as if it was their own. And so once I was able to get to that point of team immediately, we really started seeing things moving.
You talked a little bit about this supplier who helped you build that first 90-day planner that gave you favorable terms. Mm-hmm. That's kind of on the supply side. What about on the sales side? How did you sell those first planners?
Our first planner, actually, we were selling them. It was through friends and family. As we talked about it, we shared it with people. We're like, this is what we're doing. And we were going for the low-hanging fruit, things that were not going to cost us a lot to get the product out there. And that's how we started. We were selling to friends and family. We were going to the events, so all the speaking engagements that we were doing, we were hauling the planners along with us. And when we'd set up a table, I still remember and have pictures of a first table set up and just talking to people about, hey, their goals. I'm like, oh, look, we have this resource now to now help you set your goals and help you track. And that is how it started. So it went from friends, family, then doing these events. And people we met at the events were like, hey, I'm having an event at this place. Will you come and bring your planners to the event? So like, yes, I'll be there. I will travel to the next place. And really, that's how we started building.
You mentioned a few times the speaking engagements, and you mentioned that CUDA was doing the speaking. Were you doing speaking as well?
No, I was not, because that was not my thing. I'm great at executing vision. So if you create a plan, I'm wonderful at executing. Behind the scenes, I own that. But when it comes to being in front of people and sharing and speaking from the heart, I never want to make it about me. And I think in my mind, when I'm on, if I'm the one on stage and speaking, it seems as though it's about me. So I set up the table. I spoke to people as they came to the table, and I helped them understand how to use the planner and the different ways that they can go into it, how they can make it their own. So even though it's a product that is created for everyone to be able to use it, ways that they could customize it and make it their own. So on one-on-one conversations, I was great at doing that, but I was always at all the events.
You shared with me, and if you don't mind, I'll share this now. You shared with mm-hmm. me that you felt like you were suffering from self-doubt, from imposter syndrome, and you made a stretch goal for yourself in 2020. So what is that stretch goal?
Yes. So the goal is to come outside of my comfort zone and start speaking more to people. So going on podcasts and getting on stages. Obviously, stages might not be possible right now, but doing, even if it's Zoom, webinars, anything that gets me outside of my comfort zone to speak with people and share my heart, and then hopefully inspire others to also do the same and go outside of their comfort zone. That is really all that I want. So that is my stretch goal for 2020, is getting more on podcasts, getting outside of my comfort zone, and hoping to inspire others with my story.
Well, you're doing a great job, so I'm glad you made that your stretch goal for this year. When you think about advice from what you've learned mm-hmm. for early stage social entrepreneurs, so what's something you've learned on your journey that you would pass along?
One thing I've learned, you've got to lead with your passion, right? Passion is what's going to get you through when things get difficult. So if you've built a business and you're using, let's say, resources, the profits and proceeds from that to fund your social impact, when things get difficult, when moments where maybe you're not seeing sales come in or people using your services as much as you wanted, the passion that you have is what's going to keep you fighting so you do not give up. So I would say that that's really one advice I would give, is lead with your passion. Let it all be that.
If people were looking for you online or on social media, where would they look?
So you can find me, and This Is My Era on Instagram. We are This Is My Era Official. And me personally, I am Ruth Biza. And then also on our website, it's thisismyera.com.
What would you call on us to go and do as a result of this conversation?
I would love for every single one of you listening to visit our website, purchase a planner or purchase a course. And I really want you to, it's basically enhancing yourself and empowering another person. So it's a two for one, right? You get your planner, you get to learn, or you get a course, you get to build up your skills and also help educate somebody else. I'd love for you to hop on, get a planner, join a course, and hey, let's change the world together.
Hey, Ruth, thanks so much for being with us on Social Entrepreneur.
Thank you so much for having me, Tony.
And thanks to you, the listener, for joining us today. You are the reason that we produce Social Entrepreneur. You can find the show notes, bonus material, and more at tonyloyd.com. That's TonyLoyd.com. Well, listen, thanks so much for joining me today. And until next time, please remember to use this one short, amazing life and go make an impact. Thanks. We'll talk to you next time on Social Entrepreneur.